You're listening to the Nitty Gritty Podcast with Jen Gall and Shona Hutchings, where they discuss the nitty gritty of creative entrepreneurship.
Welcome to episode 6, and today we're talking about raising your prices. I think to start this off, though, I'm going to hand it off to you, Shona, because I know you recently did this, and there's a lot, I think, that you can probably talk about just from your recent.
Yeah, so, I mean, my business is quite fresh, and after being in business for a little bit, I've been able to determine that I was kind of undervaluing myself, I guess. So I decided that it was time to raise my prices overall, but in order to do that, I had, like, so much anxiety, and it's mostly because I really like all of my clients, and I know that by raising some of my prices, it might mean losing some of them, just because they might have the price that I originally started off with. And since then, I've kind of been slowly like raising them for new clients, but hadn't been raising them for the clients that I already had. And it just got to the point where like, I really just needed to do it overall just so that I could continue to do the work that I needed to do or invest in equipment that I might need, or
that consistency is nice too.
Yeah.
Like when it's,
especially with like billing, it just makes it so much easier when you're invoicing and doing your budgeting and whatnot, because like I can't determine how many, or it's harder, I can, but it's harder to determine how many shoots I need to do to get my overall like income goal.
Right.
If all of my clients are paying different amounts. So yeah, I just had to raise it overall. But yeah, I had a ton of anxiety while I was doing this because I knew that it could mean potentially that I lose some clients. And also, like, I had a lot of anxiety of how I was going to word it, because I didn't want my clients to think it had anything to do with them, which it doesn't.
Yeah, no, it rarely does.
Yeah, so rarely. So just get, like, creating a way to say that, like, I'm going to be raising them, and, like, I didn't want to say I understand that you might not be able to afford it, however, that was an understanding that I had, but just saying, like, my business has grown, and with that, like, I'm raising my prices, basically, but... Yeah, I had to make it about the value of what I offer, not about them or what they're paying. And basically, yeah, just growth means more money because I want to be able to offer more things. But I also want to not have to do as many shoots to create the like income that I want, basically.
You also have to think of it, too, in terms of the value and the quality that you want to offer your clients, like from like step one to step whatever end it looks like. And that's really hard to do when you're so overwhelmed with a ton of clients. And let's be honest, sometimes when you're saying yes to everything, they're not all your ideal clients. So it doesn't always really create like the best processes and the best streamlining for entrepreneurs when it just doesn't fit, I guess.
Yeah, going back to my, like, planning for 2019 podcast, basically do less better, and, like, more money, less clients.
More money!
But, yeah, do less better. So I'd rather have higher quality, not quality, sorry, like, higher paying clients so that I can do or have less of them so that the quality of work that I can give them is higher.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think, I know for us, with something simple, we changed our prices at least 3 times. And that's just the way of business and the way of entrepreneurship. I think as you grow and as your team grows, pricing needs to change. And there's always some anxiety that comes along with that. But at the end of the day, like you, I think what you said about like making it about the business, because at the end of the day, that is what it's about. It's never... almost never about a client or, you know, trying to change completely what you're doing. It's just simply that business is growing and maybe your target audience has grown. And so you need to kind of reevaluate what that looks like on all fronts. And usually it starts with pricing.
Yeah. Okay. So then in terms of my pricing, I kind of have 2 pricing structures only because what I'm offering now is a little different than what I was offering before. And that's like brand and content photography as well as like lifestyle family photography. And I decided to branch out into the other one only because sometimes people were asking me to do it. So I saw that there was a demand And two, sometimes the value that maybe my competition or like other people who are offering that in London and what they're asking is not what I was asking for with brand photography. And therefore I was kind of undervaluing myself for the lifestyle and the family shoots. So what's the difference between the two and why am I pricing, or why will I guess maybe yeah. This is out now, but, why will I be pricing one higher than the other? And the brand photography is priced a bit lower because basically with the brand and content photography, a lot of people are hiring me to do it, or hire photographers in general yeah. to do it, because they're posting it on like social media, or they're posting it on their website or Facebook or wherever they're putting it. And it's not something that they're using as like a work of art.
Or a keepsake.
Yeah, or like some sort of memory that they want printed and put on the wall that they're going to keep forever in a photo album or whatnot. It's going to constantly be like redone, mm-hmm. and they want it to update with their business. So I don't find that the brand and content photography should be priced as high personally, because it's not a keepsake. It's used once. Like if I do like batch photos for someone's social media, it's like one post.
Yeah.
So if they're paying me like $250 for an hour of my time, and they're going to use those things once and get rid of them, then the value for them isn't perceived in that cost, because it's not something that's recurring. Like, sorry, it's not something that they're going to keep
yeah.
and use as a memory and whatnot. Whereas with like family photography and lifestyle, the perceived value is there because they're going to keep it forever and it's a memory.
And I think something on that front too is like, when you think about from like my perspective, if I'm going to pay someone to take photos, even though we take photos, like I can't take photos of me and my team, it becomes mm-hmm. very, very challenging. So for example, we would hire you, but in that situation, like if I'm posting it on social media, it's so fast and it's so quick that we have to have new content
mm-hmm.
so often, where it's like, I'm like paying, let's say $200 plus for 15 photos, for example, is totally unrealistic, because those 15 photos will be used in less than a month, realistically, and they'll be out of people's minds within the next couple weeks. So in terms of like the time frame for mm-hmm. something that's worth that amount of money, really doesn't make sense to me. And I mean, that's my own personal opinion, like 100% my own view on this. But for example, for something where it's like for family shoots where there is that value, hell yeah, I would pay that, because it's something that's going to last for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for branding and social media purposes, it just that pricing just doesn't connect with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I find that there is a disconnect there for myself.
And I'm talking specifically like pictures that people are using like on their Instagram.
Oh, 100%.
Like
yeah,
I wouldn't
yeah.
say that someone who is pricing like professional headshots should be charging less than they're charging, because that's like, that's going to be used for a few years.
Right.
Even. So
yeah.
I don't, it's not every type of branding content or advertising or marketing type photography.
Yeah.
I'm specifically talking about people who are hiring photographers for their
social
media content. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I'm on the exact same page with that. And I think everyone needs to evaluate like their worth and their value, but at the same time, like really understand the audience that they're working with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there needs to be that connection there in terms of pricing. And again, that's just a personal choice.
Yeah. I mean, and you just have to determine like, what is it that you want to make in the end? And like, you have to cover your costs. Every photographer out there knows equipment is expensive, and if you're undervaluing yourself, you're going to be constantly in the red, because you just can't afford to like buy or pay for your equipment or
mm-hmm.
your insurance or the apps that you have to
yeah.
use to edit your photos and whatever. And I think it's hard sometimes for people to understand that like my 2 hours at your shoot is really like 7 or 8 hours
mm-hmm.
of my time. So understanding your time that you put into it, and then the cost of your equipment, and making sure that you're actually making money is important.
Yeah.
And if you're not raising your prices gradually
mm-hmm.
or even all at once, which we'll talk about in a sec,
yeah,
then yeah, you probably won't make any money, and you can't really do it as
no.
a business. So,
and we want to be able to offer you things, which means sometimes pricing is either higher or not realistic for some people, I suppose. But I think that's something too, like And I know we've talked previously about, you know, offering things for, or people asking for things for free. Mm-hmm.
I do want to do a podcast specifically on asks of creative businesses, because I think that that could be a whole other topic for us.
100%. So yeah. Mark that in your calendar, that's happening.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of kind of understanding, like, the pricing structure that you offer. Oh, I think I'm going to go off. I can't even remember what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anyways, next time on Jenny.
Sorry, guys.
Understanding your worth and your value. Okay, yeah. So the other thing we wanted to talk about, that when you're raising your prices, there's basically, like, two ways to do it. And one way is to do it gradually. So basically, you can kind of start off with a number that you think is realistic for your business, and then as your business kind of goes on, you can do it, like, seasonally or quarterly or however you think you want to do it. And you just have to kind of outline that to your clients, whether it be in your contract or maybe you have, like, updates that are sent out to them, etc. Just so that they are aware, I guess, or understand that your prices will be going up. So you can do this by, like, giving incentives even, which could be, like, a marketing thing that you can do. So you can say, like, oh, our prices will be going up in the spring. Book now for whatever and keep this current rate, which in turn could get you more clients, and therefore you might even be making more than just raising your prices. But yeah, doing it gradually. Or sometimes you can do it gradually and just introduce the new pricing for only new clients. So you might keep your existing clients at what they're paying and then only have new clients paying the new rate. The only problem with that I've found is, like, sometimes as your business grows, you still have people paying your, like, introductory rate, which you now realize is unrealistic for your business, and you have new clients paying a lot more. So then the jump between the two sometimes can be scary.
And that's definitely the option or the decision that we went with, was, like, we started at a price, and then as we realized, oh my gosh, like, we're adding so many additional things to this, we need to be charging more, and then we would charge, like, our new clients at that. And then when we hit January, so, like, let's say our business started in June of 2017, once we hit January, we sent out an email and saying, you know, our prices are rise, very similar to what you did, like, our prices are raising, and, like, starting as of, you know, this date, everyone will be on this pricing structure. And then actually our pricing changed again when we started to introduce new services. So that one I think is very similar. Like, we have some clients that are, you know, have been grandfathered in, and we have some clients who have been introduced to a new pricing structure. And that's just the way it works in terms of pricing. Like, there's going to be different pricing structures, and I think you see that a lot, especially in the creative industry, where you have to, like, ask for a quote.
Mm-hmm.
Because every project, like, I was told once, never, and again, I think this is a bit different for photography, so that you can package things together, especially, like, with weddings mm-hmm. and engagement shoots. But for us with, like, design and branding and social media, I can't put a package together for that, because it's going to be different for every single person.
Mm-hmm.
And I can give, like, a very vague range of what our average pricing would be, but again, that will be completely different when I actually meet and consult with a client. So
mm-hmm.
it just comes down to what it is you're offering in the industry that you're in.
Yeah, and, like, understanding who your ideal client is pretty important when you're doing your pricing. So, like, if your ideal client is, like, a working artist, mm-hmm. versus, like, a large corporation, your pricing structure needs to be different, because it's dependent on the client that you want to attract as well.
Yeah.
So the other way to raise your prices is just to go big or go home. So basically you just change your price, and then you just say, like, this is what it's going to be from now on.
Yeah.
Because what I noticed with my business is, like, if too many people are saying yes to you, then you're probably not charging enough, because
100%.
Not everyone is someone that you want to work with. And if everybody is saying yes to you, then obviously you're undervaluing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just basically go, this is what I was charging, and this is what I'm charging now. And you just kind of switch everybody over. And that's,
yes.
I kind of have done that with my business personally, only because I haven't, one, been in business for that long. So I don't have a lot to look back on in terms of finances and kind of seeing where the gradual growth has been.
Right.
But also, well, that's not really true. I have kind of introduced new pricing for new clients as it's gone on, as I've understood kind of the value of my work, but also what people would be willing to pay me. And it's almost like a market research type thing, being like, okay, if I go this much, like, will they say yes to me? Or if I go this much?
Mm-hmm.
And I did that a lot with like weddings too, trying to figure out like the market and where I was when I was doing it. But yeah. And then also at one point I was told that like they wanted me to do photos because no one else would do it for that cheap.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, hold on a second. That obviously means that I need to like update what I'm doing, because if I'm the only one that will do it for the amount that I'm doing it for, then obviously I'm not charging enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also told once that you should like, we talked like very briefly about this in our planning for 2019, but where it's like kind of figuring out your pricing structure and like starting with what you want to make that year and then working backwards. Well, I was told that once you got to that number, you had to double it and then add taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that, like the first time you like price it out, that's how much money you're taking home. And the second time is like for it to like help you build your business, and then the taxes obviously will be going to the government. So you don't actually, when you get paid taxes on a service, that's not actually your money, right? Like that shouldn't be going in savings, because at the end, like come taxes and you have to pay them.
Yeah, you have to pay it anyway.
So we, like, I know for us, like we just take that right off the top.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even factor that into our financial projections, but it also, we also have to think, like, for us, when we did that math, it was so unrealistic. Like, so unrealistic. I was like, damn, okay, I gotta figure something else out here.
Mm-hmm. That makes so much sense to me, because it's like, yeah, maybe you want to make, like, $45,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, or whatever it be. That's great if that's what you're taking home, but then there's zero left for your business.
Yeah.
So then you still have to, like, account for, like, how much do you want to grow? And then to grow, you need money to pay
and
for things.
And expenses and savings and
staff or whoever.
Staff, whatever.
Yeah, equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, I need to do that.
I also have someone else told to also maybe just do, be, like, multiplying it by three.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like,
that's a lot.
But I think that also goes back to our ideal client situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, total transparency here, guys. Like, if you've got someone or a project, not someone, if there's a project that someone has asked you to work on and it's not something you're excited about, but the income would be great, sometimes pricing that higher is the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, transparency. If someone emails me and asks me to do something that I really don't want to do, it's like, it's almost like paying for the headache that it's going to cause me.
Only because,
like, I don't. It's not something that I'm passionate about and something that I don't want to do. So I will, like, I don't know, play the game and basically see, okay, I don't really want to do this, but I'm willing to do it for this amount of money.
Yeah.
So if they're willing to pay me this amount of money, then yes, I'll do it. But otherwise, like, no, I'm not gonna.
And I'm sorry to anyone out there who's listening who has never considered this before in terms of, like, someone who pays for creative services, but, like, that's just how it works.
Oh, yeah. We don't want to do everything.
No.
So, and we can't do everything.
No, so that's just how it works. And that's why, honestly, that's why a lot of people don't have pricing.
You guys, that's why Fear Factor is a show.
What?
Do you remember that show?
Yes.
Okay, people don't eat worms on a regular basis, but if you pay them $1 million to do it, they're going to do it.
Damn, that's really good. That's a really good way to explain that.
It's the same kind of idea. Like, if I don't want to do your job, but if you pay me enough to do it, it might change my mind.
Yeah, oh my god, the worst one.
And it's not that, okay, I'm not greedy, you guys. It's not that money is the only thing. But, like,
but
if it's not something I want to do, it's not really something I want
to
do.
No, or for something you have to, like, change a lot of things around for.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into that. The worst one on Fear Factor for me was when I had to sit in tow of leeches.
Oh,
why?
I just, like, internally got a shiver.
I could do that. Anyway, sorry.
Let's stop talking about this.
Anyways,
so
okay. So after we talked about kind of, you know, either gradually changing your prices or going bigger, go home, I think the most important thing to have this outlined on is on your contract and on your invoice. So definitely updating and having a contract that very clearly states what the pricing structure looks like and what that money is going towards. I know for us, we had some challenges with our invoicing in the sense that, like, we were outlining everything so specifically that it almost became too confusing for our clients. And that was just something that we didn't know until we did it. And for example, this is honestly the best example I have, is that we used to outline, like we used to have a 1 hour meeting for communication, but there was nothing else that explained that. It was just like 1 hour communication. But if I didn't have a 1 hour meeting with some people, they would be like, oh, well, can I get that refunded? And unfortunately, that's not how that works, because we're also texting and we're calling and we're emailing. And so there was that totally on our fault on that sense, because we didn't communicate with our client how that worked and what that consisted of. So we now outline all of that on our contract, and then on our invoice, everything is into one price. So it's just like, it's this amount of money all together for everything. And then there's no confusion. The client understands because they've hopefully, fingers crossed, they've signed and they've read through the contract and they know what's going to happen. And we've kind of explained to them what's going on, but then on the invoice, they know exactly how that structure works with our pricing without it actually having to say it on the invoice. So just kind of thinking through all of that. I know I say this a lot in regards to writing and blogging, but if you're ever writing anything or putting anything into words, kind of turn the viewership around onto who you're giving it to and see if there's any questions that you would have for yourself when you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I looked at my invoice and I was like, oh, but wait, what? I don't understand this. Or, oh, like if I was seeing this sentence for the first time, like what would that actually mean? Then realistically, you might have some problems in the future with someone who looks at it for the first time.
Yeah, like you're going to be the expert in your business. So for me, when I write contracts or when I like send out invoices or whatever, I usually like ask someone who's not in my industry to look at it before I send it out. Specifically my contracts, only because sometimes with like copyright and those kind of things, it can get kind of confusing. So just making sure that you're writing in a way that people, like the layperson, would understand. Because you want to make sure that it's clear, because you don't want there to be any confusion when you do send out that invoice and then be like, wait, I read the contract, I don't remember seeing this.
And speaking of, we previously talked about like processes and systems. And I think that's something that I need to even add to my own process, is that I need to really sit down with my client about the contract. Because I do send it to my client, they do sign it, and then I always ask if they have questions, but I've never actually like gone through it, like section for section. And I think that's something that might be, or maybe even the sections that could be perceived differently or misconstrued or miscommunicated through words, where maybe if we just had a conversation, it would make sense.
Yeah.
So something to consider and to add to my
process. Reminds me of my contract. One time this is really embarrassing, but one time I was like creating a contract for a bride that I had that I was doing a wedding for, and guys, reading over and proofreading your contract's really important, but have someone else read it before you send it, but also like before you send answers to questions, always proofread them too, because I'd sent out a contract to someone, and instead of saying textual credit, which means like it said explicit textual credit, which means when you post a photo or whatever, because I don't watermark them, because when you print them, you don't want to have a watermark on it, that you would just have to say that I took the photo, basically like I do with my clients now. But I accidentally said explicit sexual credit instead of textual credit. And she was like, can you please explain to me what the heck this is? And I was just so embarrassed. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And it was because I had like revamped my contract from another time. Mm-hmm. And I just missed it. So yeah, if you are writing contracts, not only having your pricing outlined, but like make sure you proofread it or send it to someone else. Because when you want to make sure that people actually understand it when they read it, if you're not going to actually go through it, like step by step with your client. But yeah, so that you avoid doing embarrassing things like that. Yeah.
And I just wanted to clarify that Shona and I are not like lawyers or trained in the contract field in any way, shape, or form. So if you are completely new to this and you're doing something that's very, whether it's copyright or something that's like very specific to your industry, make sure to consult a lawyer or someone who goes through contracts. I do know if you are in London or somewhere where there's a small business center, they do have, I think it's monthly, where you can actually go in and go through for like $20 for an hour or half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they will actually like go through the contract with you. So highly recommend doing that if contracts are heavily used in your industry or your business and you need someone to kind of do a once over on them.
Also, if you don't have a contract yet,
get one.
Get one.
And use it?
Yeah.
Don't just have it and not give it to your clients?
It's usually, like, people who... You usually realize that you need something in writing after you've gotten screwed over.
Always.
Yeah, because it's usually, like, you agree to do something and there's some verbal communication between the two. Oh. Even though, technically, verbal agreement is a verbal contract and, therefore, it's binding and people are supposed to. But it's very hard to prove. So if you don't have a contract, also get one.
Get one.
Yeah. For invoicing, do you want to talk about what you use, or are we going to just talk about that when we do the tools?
Yeah, so we're doing a whole episode on all of the tools and all of the apps and everything that we use for our businesses, and so definitely check in on that one, which actually is our next episode.
Yeah.
So tune in, continue listening to our podcast, because this is the end of episode 6. So tune in to episode 7 to chat with us or listen to us. I guess you can't really chat with us on a podcast.
You can if you guys want to come on. So I don't know if you've noticed, but we've had our show notes. So you can either go to Jenny's website at somethingsimple.co, or you can head over to hutchingsandco.ca. And in the show notes, you'll see there's kind of like a contact form usually. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in coming on, you can also like message us or DM us or email us or whatever.
And something that a few people have done, which we've greatly, greatly appreciated, is if they've actually gone to iTunes and left a review, which we absolutely love seeing. And I love getting DMs from people who are telling me that they love this and they're really enjoying it and they feel related to kind of what we're talking about and all the different pieces. But I would greatly, greatly appreciate, we would appreciate if you went onto iTunes and left a review so that we can go on and potentially even read a few.
Mm-hmm.
On the podcast.
And constructive criticism. We're both like backgrounds of visual arts, so we know how to take mm-hmm. constructive criticism. And I want to emphasize constructive because it's very easy for people to go on the internet and just be trolls. So if you do have something or a pointer for us, we're still learning the podcast thing and I'm still learning this like audition program and everything. So if you have something that you could give us as a tip or you think we should consider, we'd also like to hear that. We just don't want like fluffy. We do want fluffy nice like comments, but we also want to know that you guys like have some things that we can improve on. So anyways.
And so thank you for listening.
Yeah, end of the episode. We'll see you guys episode 7.
Yeah.
Bye.
That's all for this week's podcast with Jen Gall and Shona Hutchings. Tune in next week for more Nitty Gritty.